Welcome to another episode of Crypto Study Hall. I'm your host, Kirsten Wagner.
And I'm your host, Kate Goldman.
And today we will be venturing into the vast conversation topic of everyone's favorite topic, the metaverse. And Kate, you mentioned, I think, a concert that was held in the metaverse recently, which I think is a great example to open this up for those who are not familiar with the metaverse of what it is. Like, can you tell us a little bit about that concert and the experience you read about or observed?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's important to note that Facebook did not invent the metaverse, but they have done an aggressive rebrand to sort of capture this interest and this fascination and this movement towards furthering the VR virtual realityification, if I can like turn that into a verb, of our lives. Mm-hmm. And so Facebook has now, of course, become Meta, although their stock ticker is still FB. And on the 26th of December, they hosted a virtual concert in the metaverse. It was actually three different concerts. So they had some pretty big names. It was the Chainsmokers, and it was Young Thug, and a third, which was David Guetta, who's a pretty large DJ. And if you look at those three artists, it's quite obvious that they were catering this event towards a younger demographic. These are artists whose fans are, you know, they're in their late teens to early 20s. These are rappers. These are sort of pop singers. And the concert was really poorly attended. And it was actually described as depressing by some of the people who attended because it was so just sort of lackluster. And I want to focus not so much on Facebook having a difficult time transitioning into this virtual concert experience, or like why this one in particular was bad, but more so of what facets of our lives just do not make sense to replicate in the virtual world. Like, is the experience of going to a concert something that can be portrayed in the metaverse? I actually saw Young Thug live in 2016 in Providence, Rhode Island, and it was such an incredible concert. I wasn't even a huge Young Thug fan when I went to the show. I was just going because my friends were going. And the energy, oh, I'm losing my voice. The energy of the crowd and just being there. And he was like an incredible live performer. That energy of being in
a crowd, right?
Thousands of people. Obviously, it's a little different with COVID now, but I just don't see how that fits into the metaverse. Like, people don't necessarily go to concerts to listen to the quality of the music. You know, you could play it off your phone if you wanted, you know, that sort of crisp quality. People go for the energy, for that feeling of being surrounded by fans who are screaming and, you know, seeing that in real life. Like, that is a very, very real and compelling experience.
I think that's right. And I saw Chainsmokers a couple years ago. That was an amazing concert. Have not seen David Guetta in person, but would love to. I agree with you. It's almost like the experience of going to like a live sporting event. Like the concert, you kind of get lost in the crowd and, you know, that is part of the experience. So it is a valid question. And then, you know, I think you compare that, like to me, it seems easier to visualize a metaverse where instead of doing a Zoom call, you know, you're grabbing a virtual coffee or something. I don't know, like at a kind of 3D Zoom experience. And not even that may not even be as satisfying as the in-person. Maybe there's a heightened sense of craving in-person contacts now that the Omicron virus is spreading. And it feels like we're to some extent back in, it's not really March 2020, but I know a lot of people have been facing quarantines because of exposure. Maybe they're not sick or asymptomatic, but just being locked up for 10 days, I think it's making people crave those in person. So maybe there's a sense of heightened awareness of kind of, you know, what we're missing out on in terms of in-person, whether it's a concert or just sitting down for an actual cup of coffee. But I think within the metaverse, I mean, there's obviously all this complexity, right? Like if you have an online concert, like, are there going to be NFTs as tickets to the concert? You know, it opens up this whole Pandora's box of, you know, how do you feed this ecosystem?
Absolutely. And even before we started recording, you and I were like, oh, you know, joking. We don't want to be on camera because we're not ready for the day yet. And so there is something really compelling about having this virtual representation of yourself where you're not focusing on like, oh, you know, I have to comb my hair and, you know, do whatever, all the things that would normally come with leaving the house and going to see people in real life. And you can have these interactions and this social aspect from the comfort of your home. And that's compelling to many people for a lot of reasons. I think the pandemic has been sort of the introvert's greatest success story because they can do everything they wanted, but, you know, we're sitting in our houses. And for extroverts like you and me, it is a little bit daunting. This reminds me in sort of a dark way of March 2020, when so many people were doing these virtual Zoom happy hours. I think I went to maybe a dozen in the first like 6 weeks of the pandemic. And quite quickly, we realized that, you know, drinking a cocktail on your couch while Zooming people or FaceTiming people is a little bit depressing and does not feel the same as being in the same room as your friends or going out or having that human experience. And, you know, as a result, I don't think I've attended a virtual happy hour in like months and months and months. And I don't think people are doing them that much. So I'm wondering if some of these trends of the metaverse, like the concerts, I wonder if that will experience a similar fallback. And then the alternative use cases like meetings will, you know, become more forward. It was some massive CEO, I want to say like, not Jack Dorsey, was saying how in 3 years he anticipates most of our work calls to be happening in the metaverse. And I think that's absolutely spot on.
I mean, that's right. I'm just pulling up some numbers here that as we look at like the growth of the metaverse, it's estimated at a value of like it's $21.91 billion now, and it's predicted to grow by at least 40% by 2030. Now you wonder where people are really extrapolating these numbers because it's based, you know, what those assumptions are. But, you know, clearly if you're looking at it from a business perspective, it's cheaper to do a metaverse conference than to like fly out to a conference and meet people for a 15-minute coffee and fly home. Or even if you're speaking, right, that you know, you can have 2 or 3 days taken for a small like event, whereas in the metaverse, you could do that more efficiently. At the same time, I have to say, like, Kate, I met you at the Milken conference.
I was just in LA.
And I loved, that was my first really big conference I traveled to. I loved speaking there about the rise of the retail investor and democratization of the markets and, you know, and just meeting people like you who are like-minded, who are enthusiastic and passionate. That kind of serendipity is something that's hard. I don't know if you can replicate that in the metaverse, or is there going to be an algorithm of like, let's shake a dice and randomly like introduce you to some, like, can you replicate the coincidence of experience of meeting someone new in the metaverse? Maybe, but there is that element of surprise that comes with an in-person event that is exciting.
Absolutely. And I mean, I can think back to the first time I met you. And then the first time we truly met was, you know, we met up in DC and we sat down for coffee. And I think within 30 seconds of meeting you, I was like, yeah, like we have incredibly similar vibes. There's like this just kind of connection and energy. And a lot of that sort of understanding of like, oh yeah, this is a person I'm going to get along with is it's the facial expressions. It's the way that you carry yourself. It's like, oh, you know, she's wearing a cool outfit. It's I like the way this person is and interacts with the world. Those are all sort of the things that we use to discern whether or not you have that, you know, that friendship connection with someone, even if it's like professional or romantic or any sort of meeting with someone, you're using a lot of nonverbal cues. And in the metaverse, I'm sure as, you know, AI and all of that is improving, they will be translating a lot of that facial expression into the way these interactions work. But so much of our communication as a you know, collective is in the unspoken. And, you know, my family is made up of psychotherapists. So we spoke a lot about this really interesting topic sort of early on in the pandemic, which was people were experiencing increased forms of alienation and disconnect from Zoom calls. And a lot of that was linked to the lack of connected eye contact and the way that communication lags, even for just like 0.001 second. It's not the same as speaking one-on-one with someone in real life, or kind of like we're doing here, where it's like pretty much being on the phone. And I think there are a lot of those like little kinks to work out where it might be imperceptible when you're just like, you know, on a Zoom call, but your brain is very highly attuned to those minute, you know, changes in the way interactions work.
Totally. And I mean, I think it's interesting also to look at it from the pop culture perspective. I recently watched The Matrix Resurrections, the sequel, right? And in a way, it was almost like a metaverse in the movie, right? They're in this. Have you seen it yet, Kate?
No, I haven't. So don't give me any spoilers.
Okay. Well, then I will not give a spoiler, but it does seem like kind of a dystopian representation of a metaverse gone wrong in a way. Yeah. And I'm overgeneralizing and apologize to any sci-fi fans mm-hmm. out there, but maybe we'll discuss it after you watch it. I'm not going to spoil it for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I agree with what you're saying. I hear what you're saying of the eye contact and kind of the micro expressions that one picks up on in an in-person conversation that are not there in like a virtual augmented reality. And so, you know, I can see the benefits of the metaverse being, and just the VR technology being to those who are unable to participate in real life, right? Like if you look at people in senior living facilities or paraplegics or, I don't know, people who can't participate maybe in the way you and I can get around daily life, like that is something that I would want to then just jump into the metaverse. So, you know, but if
a really good point. Yeah. I mean, especially as so many spaces are not like ADA compliant, or they're like sort of ADA compliant, or, you know, if you're in a wheelchair, if you have mobility challenges, all of these things can create barriers for, you know, moving about in your daily life. And we should do so much more to make the world readily accessible to every and all ability type. But in the metaverse, it's kind of already there.
Right, right. Or people who have like dementia, you know, my own dad has some memory loss issues, right? I'm sure given how, you know, it can be tiring for people in, you know, caregiver positions, you know, to be asked the same question over and over. I'm not talking about my dad specifically, but people in general with dementia. But I think, you know, there the virtual reality component could be really interesting to be able to, maybe there's some opportunity to help with memory loss, you know, in a virtual reality segment. But yeah. You know, so there are all sorts of applications. Those are not the sexy applications to talk about the metaverse. That's right. Not what like Zuckerberg wants us to think about people who are paraplegics or like losing their memory. But, you know, in a way it makes sense. Those who have lost the ability or other capacity to participate may enjoy or appreciate that.
Absolutely.
You know, application. So
yeah. And even if you're, you know, if you use a voice assistance technology, I am sure all of that is incredibly translatable into the, you know, metaverse, into the VR world. And it, you know, all of these things can be, I think it's important to note, kind of taking a step back, this is radically new, and it is just now sort of becoming in the mainstream attention. And there's a lot of things that will be worked out. A lot of the kinks have to be kind of worked out And technology will play a massive piece in easing a lot of those, you know, initial challenges. I'm also thinking about, you know, one of my greatest grievances with Zoom meetings is I find it a lot harder to be 100% paying attention, especially if it's, you know, like a long meeting or if it's like a conference or, you know, it's harder to give your full attention when your email's dinging or, you know, the dog is trying to get out and like use the bathroom. All of these things sort of present these attentional challenges where, you know, there's things competing for your attention versus right. In real life, you're sort of obligatorily dialed in. You're sort of like in the moment for the most part. And I'm just wondering if like, how could technology play a role into really forcing us to tune into only one piece of the metaverse and not have, you know, our email distracting us, not have Twitter notifications popping up.
That's interesting. I mean, I guess at its core, like, is the metaverse compatible with kind of mindfulness and being present in the moment, right? Can you be fully present and in the metaverse at once?
Yeah. And it's also
what kind of experience will it be?
How much of our lives, I feel like I'm saying too many criticisms. I'm actually quite fond and like really excited to see where this goes. But, you know, how much of our lives do we want to be spending staring at a screen? I could not figure out why I was having such bad migraines at the beginning of the pandemic. And I realized I was staring at screens like 4 times the amount as I was before the pandemic. You were just like screened in. Even, you know, I've got multiple monitors, I've got my phone, and then you're watching TV late at night, like all of these screens. And I am obsessed with technology and I'm obsessed with thinking about it and how it can improve our lives. But just even interacting with a screen is a challenge, and it can impair vision and, you know, give us vision headaches and stuff like that. So, you know, maybe there'll be like a blue light metaverse.
I mean, it is interesting to see how it's engineered and how kind of the next generation grows up with it. I feel like any kids who have been using Roblox have already gotten like an intro crash course to the metaverse. And I know that has been something, even like I saw a headline that Roblox is looking to kind of conduct teaching in the metaverse and that they're granting STEM organizations like money to kind of teach STEM in their metaverse. So can that be a hook to maybe lure in students to learn new things? But then to your point, like you can do that, but if people are unhealthy while doing it, we already have like a childhood obesity epidemic and all these other issues. Is there a way to do it in a way that isn't promoting sedentariness? You know, I don't know. These are the unique questions and challenges that are faced, you know, with this new technology. Cause I, like you, share the excitement about the upside, but then you also, you know, think about what can go wrong. So
totally.
But I guess that's an exciting role for people in Congress to think about all that now. And for mostly the innovators to, you know, as they're building out their platforms and systems, how are they going to do it in a way that's like, you know, responsible innovation?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially as like, you know, over the last few days, as I'm watching the news, there is a massive question and, you know, debate around how do we send kids back to school? Should children be learning in person? Should they not be? A lot of young kids aren't vaccinated yet, or they aren't eligible for the booster shots and all these different things that we know factually have enormous benefits for our health. And then, you know, the teachers who are subsequently exposed to these very young kids coming in, many of whom, you know, haven't been vaccinated yet, could. And then, you know, you're talking about how these young children are really equipped to, you know, they've been playing on Roblox forever. I grew up playing Sims. It seems like kind of a natural fit to move learning into the online space that kids have already occupied. You know, again, it's not perfect. We have to deal with the screens issue and, you know, all these different questions. But as far as just public health and safety, it seems like an immediate upside.
Definitely.
Well, this has been a great podcast. We're closing out at 20 minutes. So I'm really excited next week to, we're going to have another guest, Wale from Amazon, who will be joining, talking about his views on